Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, world. And I love to say that because we're connected to England right now. And it's we had a holiday, Memorial Day, yesterday here in Boston. It's the 26th, I can't believe it, of May 2015. And Tony Davis is back. Tony, how are you?
Hi. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. And we just talked a little bit. You're just getting over the flu that kind of ran through our neck of the woods and I guess ended up over there. But
yeah,
you sound pretty good.
It was awful, but getting through it.
Great. Well, boy, I had fun putting not only the last poster together for this show with Sergeant Riley, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and today we're going to talk about, introduce your character.
Well, the character is... He's called Sergeant Godley, and Godley was second in command, really, to a guy called Frederick Abeline, who was in charge of the Jack the Ripper inquiry in London in the 1888. And so he's my character. He goes into schools talking about crime and punishment, what it was like in Victorian Britain 130 years ago, and how crime and punishment has developed. In particular with regard to our very famous murderer of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah,
so that's how he developed.
You know, I think in a bizarre way, there's kind of a, I don't even know if I can get the words out, kind of a romantic notion about Jack the Ripper. Victorian times, you and I were just talking about the fog, the setting, the victimization, all of this. I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
We've romanticized him quite a lot. We've romanticized him immensely. And, you know, over the years, he's films, Johnny Depp has been in films about him. And so he's entered certainly the British psyche quite a bit. And we have, you know, touch with America that one of the suspects is American. So, you know, whether he went back over there and continued his wrongdoings in America, that's one of the theories that that was brought forward. But looking at London in 1888, particularly Whitechapel, which was the east end of London, was a pretty dire place to live. It was really bad. I mean, it was overcrowded. There'd been a lot of influx of people from the Eastern Europe escaping the vicious pogroms that were going over in Eastern Europe. A lot of Jewish people came into, they estimate 40,000 Jewish people came into that area. Just that small area of London became a den of vice and not a very nice place at all. Very overcrowded and completely crime-ridden. So that's where we go today to look at for Jack the Ripper.
And because of the romanticized part in the movies and all of that, you know, I don't much of the details that you just told me a little bit earlier. But I didn't know that they never caught him.
No, we don't know who he is. When we say he, there are some edge of thought to say it might have been a woman that did this. But when you, again, we go back to Whitechapel of the 1880s, crime-ridden, overcrowded, filthy, disease-ridden place, part of London. They were estimated that there were 20,000 plus prostitutes just in that one area of London. So there was no work or very little work. People were in a pretty bad way. I mean, just one example of that is that just one street, it was called Flower and Dean Street, which still survives today. There was, of the 120 rooms in that street, the census showed 750 people living there.
Oy.
So if you're looking at that, six people per room.
Oy.
And it costs fourpence to have a doss for a night, which was a sleep for a night, cost fourpence. And also, ironically, fourpence was roughly the cost of a glass of gin. So these ladies went out, and fourpence was the cost of their services.
Interesting.
So everything kind of related around four pennies in the old money, not today.
Right.
So you're looking at they would get their fourpence and make a choice. Did they go and sleep for the night, or did they go and get some gin? Usually the gin won. And so they would go and into the local public houses and down some gin. So in that area, crime wasn't unusual. Murder was not unusual in that area. Even before we get into Jack, there were several attacks on women, several knife attacks on women in the early 1888s. So it really wasn't that unusual. Until there was an attack on a lady called Martha Tabram, and she was a prostitute. And on the 7th of August, 1888, her body was found on a landing outside a house in St George's Yard in London. And she'd been murdered; throat was cut. But earlier that evening, she'd been drinking with two soldiers, and I love it because the people don't really use their real names either, so that made the investigation a bit difficult for the police. She was with another prostitute called Pearlie Poll, which I just love the name, and they'd been out with these soldiers, and then the next morning, poor old Martha was found murdered, but Pearlie Poll wasn't very helpful towards the police, really. She went to identity parades and couldn't pick people out and stuff like that. So it really... But it was a frenzied attack on poor old Martha. I mean, she had 39 stab wounds in her body. So that was... There is debate whether she was the first of the Ripper murders. But... You know, everything is debatable. There is no hard and fast, really, rules with this at all. But at the end of the month, the first that they really think was the Ripper murder was put on Mary Ann Nichols, known as Polly. And again, she was a prostitute, and she was found in a place called Buck's Row, which was a long street in Whitechapel. She was actually on the pavement, on the sidewalk. She needed, again, she'd gone to the house, but she didn't have her fourpence for the doss. So she went out and she got a new hat. And it's just amazing. I'll soon get my doss money, she said. See what a jolly bonnet I've got. And off she trotted out into the night. That was around about 1 o'clock in the morning. And shortly afterwards, she was found murdered in Buck's Row. That, we think, is down to the kind of the first murder that is put down to Jack.
Wow. What was the total number of murders?
Well, 5, 6. That's the 5 definitely that they say, 6 possibly, and sometimes 8. It depends on who you speak to. Some people say that Martha Tabram, the first one I mentioned there, was, some say wasn't. So there's all sorts of anomalies with it. So, yeah, we know that we put 5 down as definites, and certainly some others were possibles. But with any sort of mass killer, the frenzy builds up. And,
yep.
And this is what you see in these murders. You know, the ferocity of the attacks slowly build up. So you have poor old Polly murdered in the street, found by a police officer. And in those days, in London, was split into beats for police officers. So his beat would be 15 minutes. He would pass a particular point roughly 15 minutes, every 15 minutes throughout the night. And he would meet other police officers, and their beats wouldn't sort of touch onto each other's. So the whole area would be covered by police officers. So if you think about that, he's got a window of 15 minutes in which to do his deed and get away.
Wow.
So so, you know, he was pretty quick when you come to Polly Nichols. Then a few days later, a lady called Annie Chapman, again, another prostitute, on the 8th of September, 88. Now, she was found in the backyard of a house at, in Hanbury Street in again, all this happens within probably a square mile of the west, of the east end of London. So she's found in the backyard, having been murdered. But the strange thing there is at 5:20 that morning, a guy comes out of number 27 and hears a noise on the other side of the fence and a lady saying no. I mean, he's quite used to them probably using that area for whatever it is that they were doing, and took no notice, really. And at 6 a.m., poor old Annie was found murdered the other side of the fence. So this... Did he hear the murder? If he'd have looked over, would he have seen Jack the Ripper? We don't know, but it's fun to sort of romanticize and think, God, if he'd have just looked over that
fence, near misses. Yeah.
I mean, the same goes through. I mean, he was pretty lucky most of the time, and with Jack, because you know, the kind of next one, if you see the film with Johnny Depp, and a bunch of grapes plays a part in the actual film. Well, Elizabeth Stride, a long Liz, she was called, is the next victim. And she was born in Sweden and came over to the UK. She was a prostitute. And this is the night of what they called the double event. And she was found in a place called Duckfields Yard, which is a place where a guy stored his horse and carriage, and a guy called Dimschutz was bringing his carriage home. He'd been selling cheap jewellery at the market, and he was coming home, and about 1 o'clock he turns his horse and cart into this very narrow little entrance into a yard, and his horse shies, and he looks down, he sees something on the side. Now this is very strange, because right outside is a club, a working man's club, right next to where it is. So it's quite a well-lit area, but towards the back is a bit dark. And he sees this thing, and he runs into the club to get help, comes out, and they find Liz Stride. But she's only been... she's had a throat, but there's been no other injuries other than her throat has been slashed. What we think is that he was, again, disturbed by Dimschutz coming in. And the horse shying away wasn't really shying away. My thought is the horse wasn't really shying away from the body lying on the ground. The horse had shied away from the fact that there was somebody hidden in the darkness.
Right, right.
And it shied. When Dimschutz has gone into the thing, old Jack has gone. So we kind of, again, almost caught him. But,
interesting.
Again, he's mingled with the crowd and gone. But he's been disturbed now. So he's now on his way. He hasn't satisfied that lust for violence that's built up in him. So off he goes. And he then goes to into... If you think about London, it's covered by two different police forces, believe it or not. The Metropolitan Police, the large Metropolitan Police... covers the outskirts, but the actual 1 square mile in the middle of London is actually policed by the City of London Police. So it's a different police force.
Right.
So, and it still is today. And so Jack has now crossed out of the metropolitan area. He's gone into the City of London, which is just, you know, an invisible border, but he's actually crossed it. And he goes into a place called Mitre Square. And Mitre Square is one of the only places that was left still intact, but unfortunately they are decimating it at the moment. They're knocking the place down because most of this is now gone. Most of this area has now gone, unfortunately. But he goes in and he there's a lady called Catherine Eddowes, and she's the only one that we know was not a prostitute. She'd been picking hops. Sorry, in Kent, and she'd come home early from there because it wasn't that good. But she'd gone, excuse me, just take a drink. And she'd gone out, she hadn't got any money, so she'd gone out looking for somebody to get some money from. And she must have got some money from somewhere, because in the early hours of the morning, or late night, she was found drunk and incapable by a police officer and taken to Bishopsgate Police Station, where she was locked up until she sobered up. And the usual thing here, once she's sobered up, she's released by the sergeant, which the same applies today, really. Once they've sobered up, they're not disorderly, they're just incapable. You let them go. And she shouts, "Good night, old cock," to the sergeant, and off she goes down the street. And that was at 1 o'clock when she was released. At 1:45, she's found murdered in Mitre Square.
Wow.
And so it's quite a walk from Bishopsgate to Mitre Square. So she's found there, and again, a police officer goes through there at a certain time. 15 minutes later, he walks back through that again, and she's there. This time, he's been able to slake his lust a little bit that he has mutilated her quite severely. And so, again, no radios, obviously, so the police officer would be blowing his whistle and getting people to come and getting the ball in motion to set up another inquiry into another murder. And as they... But this is now in the City of London, so a different police force has got to look after this one. And it would appear that relations between City of London and the Met at that time weren't particularly great. So there was a lot of argy-bargy between the two of them, and so I don't think a lot of dots were connected between the two of them with this murder. But just across the road from Mitre Square, there's a doorway, and that doorway is still there. I think it's an Indian restaurant now, but there's a doorway, and a police officer found in that doorway a piece of Catherine Eddowes' apron, bloodstained, and on the wall was written what is believed to be, "The Dueys are the men that will not be blamed for nothing."
Huh.
So you've got this writing on the wall. Now, when the police arrived, they're looking at this thinking, okay, Jewes, but it's spelled J-E-W-E-S, not as in Jews, as in J-W-S. So they're thinking, why? What's this about? But Charles Warren arrives, and he's the commissioner for the police, for the Metropolitan Police, and he orders it to be washed off. Now, this is crucial evidence. It's washed off. It's washed off because he says that he didn't want race riots. He didn't want the Jewish people being blamed for these murders and stuff like that. So he ordered it to be washed off, which it was. Luckily, somebody took note of what was written. The wording, whenever you look at it, might be slightly different, but it's a very strange thing to put, really. The Jewes are the men that will not be blamed for nothing. I mean, try and work it out. It takes some time to work out what the person is actually saying. But they believe that's to be connected, because obviously Catherine Eddowes' apron was underneath the actual writing. So they that continues into that inquiry. And then the last one that we kind of put down to Jack and say, yes, it was him. There's a young girl called Mary Jane Kelly, and she was born in Limerick in Ireland in about 1863. So she's only a young girl, 25 years old. And she had a very small house, really a back room with a separate entrance, what it more like a 13 Miller's Court in Whitechapel. And that's where she lived. And but again, she made up stories, whether they were true or not, we don't know about her life. She claimed to be Irish, she claimed to be Welsh, she claimed to be married to a Welsh miner that was killed in a quarry accident. She was known to drink, but not to excess. A lot of the women that we've mentioned before, they drank to excess, but she didn't seem to drink to excess. And at 11 p.m. On the night of the 9th of November, she was drinking in a Britannia pub in Whitechapel. Roughly 45 minutes later, she was seen walking with a man. 1 a.m., she was heard singing in her room. And then at 3 a.m., she went outside. Now, there seems to be a different view on night and day in the Victorian times. They didn't seem to have a night and day that we know about. You know, quite often people were wandering about at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, quite happily. There didn't seem to be that night and day thing that we have. And she bumped into a guy called George Hutchinson and asked for sixpence. We're not too sure whether he actually gave her the sixpence. But anyway, and what George Hutchinson was doing outside her home at that time in the morning was not really that well pursued by the police. Anyway, she disappeared back into the house. Sometime during the night, somebody heard the word murder being shouted. But again, that's not unusual in Whitechapel at that time and in 1888. And but at 10:45, the rent collector and a guy called Thomas Bauer knocked on the door to collect the rent for the landlord. And no reply. There was a broken pane of glass in the window, and he kind of moved things to have a look, and he saw inside the room, and to say Mary Kelly was mutilated would be an understatement. Anybody that would like to go on and put Mary Jane Kelly into the internet and take a look at the pictures, you'd need a pretty strong stomach.
Wow.
They were, I mean, she was literally taken to bits.
Wow.
But policing being policing at that time, we had no fingerprints. That hadn't come into operation yet. Certainly no DNA or anything like that. So they even took photographs of Mary Kelly's eyes just in case there might be the imprint of the killer still on in her eyes. That's how sort of behind the times we were at that time. So, and they apparently the story goes that they brought some police dogs. It's the first time they were going to use police dogs, and they let the police dogs out, and they basically bit a policeman and ran off. So that didn't work. So the actual murder of the scene was quite horrendous. So those are the ones that we kind of know about. There were several. Post that, there were lots of other murders that went on, and some have been attributed to Jack, some haven't. There were torso murders and stuff like that that happened that the police looked at. And I think once Mary Kelly was gone, I think that kind of draws the line that we think that those were Jack the Rippers. He'd reach his zenith, I think, with that one, because he could take as long as he wanted with her.
Oh, because he was in the house.
He was in a house.
Right.
So he could take as long as he wanted, and believe me, he did. And there were other murders following that. But we think that's probably the one that reached is the maximum. And where he went from there, we don't know. I mean, but the police were inundated at the time with letters. Like the famous ones are like the Dear Boss letter, which was written, and, you know, the From Hell letter, which is a very famous letter, saying that he took a piece of kidney which he fried and ate. It was very nice. So they got inundated with letters, but there are sort of joint. So we had another guy that we called the Yorkshire Ripper in the 80s here in Britain that murdered 13 women. Luckily, we caught him. They at that time, they got fixated with a video recording, not a tape recording, of a voice and it took the police off in completely the wrong direction with the Yorkshire Ripper. And these letters, we don't know how much credence were given by the police, but they were inundated with letters from all sorts of things, which would detract, obviously, from the investigation. But numerous people have come to become suspects. Excuse me, just take a quick slurp.
Sure, sure. Tony, we have to. We only got like a minute here today, but
okay.
I'm just fascinated, first of all, by your ability to tell a story and describe. You know, I know just in the short time we've known each other, I said before we started the show, I'm just amazed at the aptitude you have for all of the balls you've got in the air between, you know, doing your World War One stuff, doing Jack the Ripper, and, you know, a myriad of other things. This is just captivating. So let's call this the first in a series of Jack the Ripper, because
okay.
I know we could go on. I'd like to find out, you know, what distinguished him. Was it the ferocity of the murders that distinguished him from other murderers? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, more of the ferocity than anything else. But, you know, the myriad of suspects is really interesting, and there's all sorts of stuff that we've not had time to touch on, but there's a lot more to it than just my inane babbling of the moment.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it sounds to me that, again, this is what I'd like to explore in the next show, is, you know, why the romanticizing? Was it because of the as I said, the ferocity, the violence.
And also that we didn't catch him.
Yeah.
And also a lot of stuff with regard to films and stuff like that have brought him, you know, notoriety. Because we didn't catch him. So it could be anybody.
I get you. Well, again, fascinating. And I love the relationship that's building between us here. I just nice to have. I think this is a great forum, all of this radio stuff and internet stuff.
Absolutely.
To form relationships that would never happen and yet have a level to them that are just so deep and rich. And I'm going to thank you so much, and let's plan it again. As you know, I got lucky on this poster. It really came out. The poster itself could be a book cover. But there was, you know, the image that you used for yourself, and also of you as the police officer investigating, and I want to talk to you more about that, because we haven't talked about your work as a policeman and how, you know, it helped you in this whole thing. So
yeah, anytime.
Okay, great,
you know,
Tony. Thank you so much, and we'll
love
see you hopefully
you.
In a week or two.
Absolutely. Let me know.
All right. Say hi to Jane,
take
please.
Care.
All right.
I will do.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Take care.
Right,
bye-bye.